is Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. A little bit later in the hour, we'll be talking about animal diseases and human health. But we're going to start off talking about the fossilized skulls of three ancient Ethiopians that are telling us what our early humans might have been like and where they came from, according to a report in this week's issue of the journal Nature. The skulls are 160,000 years old, meaning that the owners lived at the same time as Neanderthals. But the skulls belong to a creature so similar to humans that they are being called Homo sapiens, just like us, classified as Homo sapiens with only a few differences. So we're going to talk about that this hour. Our number, 1-800-989-8255, is the number. Let me introduce my guest. Tim White is a professor in the Department of Integrative Biology, University of California at Berkeley. He joins us from Berkeley. Welcome back to the program, Dr. White.
Hi, Ira.
What's so exciting about these skulls?
Well, it's their age. To start with, they're 160,000 years old, so they take us back into a period of African prehistory that was virtually unknown before these discoveries.
Do these fill in a gap? Is this like one of those missing links we keep hearing about?
Well, it's yet another link. It's no longer missing. We have now quite a succession of these fossilized crania stretching well back into the past in this desert region in Ethiopia.
And where were these discovered?
These are in the Afar Triangle. It's a lowland in eastern Ethiopia near the junction of the Red Sea Rift, the Gulf of Aden Rift, and the main East African Rift.
This is a fossil, a fertile fossil area, has it not been?
Yes, this is one of the most important regions, if not the most important region in the world, for the discovery of fossils that really allow us to look at human evolution across a very broad span of time. We have discoveries now in this particular Middle Awash study area going back to 5.8 million years. So these are the younger folks, but still, at 160,000 years ago, they're 10,000 generations into our past.
Wow, it's pretty close, isn't it?
Geologically speaking, close. And it turns out anatomically speaking as well.
Let me ask you the subway or crosstown bus question that everybody asks about. If one of these fossilized people were alive today and they were on the bus, could you tell the difference?
No. Not if you dressed them and groomed them. If you had been transported back into time, you would have seen folks living along the shore of this freshwater lake in Ethiopia at 160,000 years ago. If you'd looked closely at their faces, you would have recognized features that you recognize from your own face. Quite a small face, quite a vertical forehead, quite a rounded globular cranium. And we see this not only in the adult cranium we found, but also in the child.
1-800-989-8255 is our number. So are these Homo sapiens like exactly like we are? Have they been classified that way?
Well, they're not exactly like we are. They're a little bit different in the direction of some even more ancient fossils in Africa. So they provide an evolutionary link with earlier populations. But because they share these features, these distinctly human features, we've placed them into Homo sapiens and classified them as a different subspecies, Idaltu, which in the Afar language means old man or elder.
So were these people, let me call them, living at the same time that Neanderthals were, in a different, but Neanderthals being in Europe and these in Africa?
Yes, in fact, we know a lot more about the European record because of research there over the last century and a half. We know that Europe was very refrigerated at 160,000 years ago. Much of the continent was covered by a thick sheet of ice, and there were people living on the southern edge of that ice that we know today as the Neanderthals. Mm-hmm. And they persisted in Europe for quite a long time. They've been a kind of a thorny problem for paleoanthropologists for a long time. People have taken two schools of thought about them. Some people think, well, maybe they were ancestors, and other folks said, no, they're not ancestors. Maybe our ancestors, our direct Homo sapiens ancestors, came from somewhere else. The genetic data have been pointing toward Africa for the last 20 years, but the genetic data can only really tell you about relationships. They can't tell you about what these early African Homo sapiens looked like or what they were doing.
So this cements the out-of-Africa idea, then, a little better.
Well, there have been many out-of-Africas. For the first 3 million years of human evolution, after we split with the great apes, it was an exclusively African story. And then we had a populating of the Old World, all the way from Spain to Beijing, by a species known as Homo erectus. And then through evolutionary transitions that have been found in places like Zambia, and indeed in the Middle Awash, eventually you arise by 160,000 years ago. You see anatomically virtually modern people, and that's what these discoveries represent.
If these Homo sapiens were so modern, did they have a could you detect a culture in them, or
well, that's
a way
the great
of life?
The great thing about this discovery. We as you know, we work with a very large international team of folks. We have 14 different countries on the project. It's sort of an all-star team. We have geologists, archaeologists, paleontologists, and the archaeologists are the ones that work with the cultural remains. And they've been very pleased with these discoveries because the same sand, this ancient sand unit that yielded the fossilized crania, has yielded lots and lots of behavioral evidence in the form of the tools made by these people and used by these people, and also with the animal remains found in this sand horizon.
So what have you found about their culture and their use of tools and things?
Well, the tools range in size from very large things that are longer than your hand. These are chopping tools like hand axes and cleavers, all the way down to very small flake tools with razor-sharp edges. These are tools that these people made on volcanic glass, something called obsidian.
Mm-hmm. And what about their practices, as how they lived their lives? Could you tell anything from the site?
Well, with all the animal bones, in fact, the first thing we spotted next to Herto Village was a hippopotamus cranium eroding out of the sands. And as we excavated that, we found lots of stone tools around it and a mark left by one of these large cleavers right on the cranium itself, a deep gash that was made long before the bone fossilized. So we can tell that they were butchering these large mammals like hippopotamus and buffalo right there on that lake margin so long ago.
Mm-hmm. Was this fossil the person that you found, or the whole collection of fossils? Were these people who were buried by their own people, or did they happen to die in some place and be covered up as fossils?
Well, that's one of the very unusual things about this discovery, and it is really quite a mystery that's been raised. We know some things. We found these three crania isolated from one another, but also isolated from any other body parts. They were just isolated crania on the landscape. And as they were put back together again, the child cranium, as it had eroded out of this sand, had shattered into many, many pieces. And my colleague Berhani Asfaw in Addis Ababa pieced this back together again, and in the process of that noticed that on the base of the cranium there were these traces left by the sharp edges of these stone tools. Someone, for some reason, had sliced the tissues away from the base of this cranium. And not only that, they had enlarged the hole for the spinal cord. And not only that, they had continued to handle this cranium so that there was a sort of a polishing on the sides of the cranial vault, some kind of keeping that child's skull around after the death of the individual. On one of the adult crania, we found additional cut marks showing that it had also been defleshed, but on that one, we found a series of scratch marks all the way around the perimeter of the cranium. So this is a very interesting glimpse into very ancient mortuary practices. We don't know the full dimensions of those practices because we haven't found the rest of these bodies yet, but the heads themselves show that something was going on after the death of the individual.
Any speculation on what that might be?
Well, when we look around the world today, we see similar kinds of modification on the skulls of people in tribal societies where they're worshiping their ancestors. We see this particularly in Papua New Guinea, where the skulls of ancestors are kept around. They are often decorated and painted there. We have no evidence of that so early in time. But the parallels are rather intriguing, and it just requires, I think, some more looking and some more discovery in this particular sand horizon.
So the cranial skull, the cranial markings are not cannibalism or anything. They're more of a burial sort of thing, or non-burial.
Well, they could be cannibalism. In societies where this is observed today, often cannibalism is an early part of the funerary rite, and this led to the disease called kuru in New Guinea. The difference there is that there were eyewitness accounts of this.
Right.
We don't have any eyewitnesses. We don't have any videotape. The evidence is rather cold. So we've been very conservative in our interpretation. We can merely infer that some kind of a mortuary practice is going on. Whether or not it involved cannibalism, we just can't tell.
So tell me where the missing pieces are now left in getting a direct lineage to where you would say, what, 10,000 years ago, something like that, to the 160,000 years of these bones?
Well, we have in Europe a fairly good evolutionary succession now that culminates in the Neanderthals, and they go extinct at around 30,000 years ago, and they're replaced by anatomically modern people across Europe. What we've lacked until now in Africa was this particular linkage between anatomically modern people, whose bones had been found to go back to around 100,000 years ago, and some more archaic people that go by a whole series of different names, but they're more primitive with smaller brain cases and more projecting faces. The new ones from Ethiopia are actually just a very good intermediate in this African evolutionary series, and we can now trace our own species back through them to the more distant ancestors in the African past.
Mm-hmm. And these are young enough, so to speak, that these people you found probably had their own culture and language at this point?
We can't tell about language because the words they don't fossilize. We don't have any evidence of personal adornment, decoration of things like beads and so forth. We don't have any portable art or anything like that. We just have the stone tools and the remains of these people in their crania, at least, and we have the marks left on these skulls. So we're really just starting to learn about these people, and that's, of course, the reason the National Science Foundation supports this research, is to go out and to discover new knowledge. And for this time period of Africa, we finally have a wonderful mechanism to do that because of the preservation of all of this evidence at one place in the Afar Depression.
So have you got any other digs in the works, that stuff you can tell us about that's coming up?
Well, we're working on a 4.4 million year old partial skeleton that turns out to be the sort of Rosetta Stone for the very early hominids. We're talking pre-Lucy. We're also looking, we've found a new volcanic lava horizon that has just been dated by the Geochronology Center out here at Berkeley at 6 million years old, and underneath it we have some sediments with animal remains. So we're hoping we'll be able to find hominids in there as well.
Wow. And how soon can we have you back talking about those?
Well, with this with this large team, the one thing that remains true is we want to get the story right. We publish it in Nature, and the next time we publish another one of these fossils being analyzed, we hope to be back talking to you. You've got a great show.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for the compliment. So there's a lot more. The story is not finished yet. There's a lot more to be written about this, then.
We have a lot to learn about the past.
Yeah. And are you going back out to the dig?
We'll go out in November next year. We try to run in the non-rainy season, because this is way off the edge of the asphalt. In fact, this particular year we found these crania was an El Nino year. We had a lot of trouble getting into the field, and we finally got in and found these in pretty rapid order, and then we couldn't get out, and one of our archaeological colleagues had to get back to his job in Marseille, so we took him out to the river and pushed him across the river because he had to walk to the asphalt that day, and that's the day we went up and had lunch and found two of these crania.
Well, have lunch again, Tim. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Ira.
Dr. Tim Wise, professor of the Department of Integrative Biology at the University of California at Berkeley, talking about fossil finds. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to change gears and talk about prairie dogs and monkeypox and all other kinds of diseases that may stem from animals and head to people. Stay with us. We'll be right back.